The Book Geeks Uncompromised, episode 23. Thank you for mouthing me.
You're welcome.
Across the room. That helps so much. This week we'll be reviewing 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne.
You remembered that without looking.
I didn't have to look at I closed my eyes on purpose because I saw you grabbing the book and I was like, no, I remember it. I can do it. Well, hello again, everyone.
Hello. Welcome back.
Yay, more books.
More books. I mean, this was our first classic, too.
This was. It was,
first classic.
About. Yep, we'll be talking about more later. Shows why I don't read classics.
But it ticks off one of my boxes for reading a classic.
That's true.
Was one of my goals this year.
To read
I don't think I was just going to read one. I think it was two or three. But
yeah,
still.
But it's a start.
It's a start.
It's a start. I will not be ticking off that box at any point unless you force me to. That's about the only time. So how was your week?
It was all right. What did you get up to?
Mostly our book of the week. I wasn't really had a chance to dive into anything else with our other podcast and all the other fun stuff we work on. But yeah, I dived into our book. That was my big thing.
So I saw something this week that I'm wondering if you'll get the same thing I did. Mm. You remember Lost Stars, the Star Wars book we read?
Yeah, Star Wars book.
Okay,
yeah.
So that author, Claudia Gray, is writing another YA novel. It's not Star Wars, but I want to read this description to you and see if it sounds familiar at all.
Okay.
She's a soldier. Noemi Vidal is 17 years old and sworn to protect her planet, Genesis. She's willing to risk anything, including her own life. To their enemies on Earth, she's a rebel. He's a machine. Abandoned in space for years, utterly alone, Abel has advanced programming that's begun to evolve. He wants only to protect his creator and to be free. To the people of Genesis, he's an abomination. Noemi and Abel are enemies in an interstellar war, forced by chance to work together as they embark on a daring journey through the stars.
It's Lost Stars again.
It's Lost Stars again, just without the Star Wars label. Which was a book that we enjoyed.
It was fine, yeah. It was fun, but it's the same author.
Yeah.
So it's like she took her book and then went, okay, change that name, change that name, change
yeah,
that
exactly.
name.
Yeah, exactly.
And robots.
Well, I guess there are droids, but one of the main characters is a robot.
All right. I mean, I guess. I mean, if it ain't broke.
It's like I enjoyed Lost Stars enough that I still kind of want to read it, but I don't know.
Nah, that doesn't sound like anything that interests me because I did enjoy Lost Stars. But I don't think I would have enjoyed it if it wasn't Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because the story wasn't exactly original, I guess. I mean, you could kind of see where it was going the whole time. But at the same time, it was Star Wars. I liked that I was getting to see a different look and a universe I already loved.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's not one I'll be jumping on.
Yeah.
Again, unless you force me.
It has a really pretty cover, though.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, it does. It has a very pretty cover.
Too bad this is only an audio podcast. You can't see it.
Well, you can go look it up. It's Defy of the Stars by Claudia Gray. It's very pretty.
There you go.
No, I did have something happen to me this week that I texted you about and you didn't respond.
What was that?
It was somewhat traumatic for me.
Oh, okay. What, did a book fall in water?
No.
That's terrible, but...
No.
What?
So, my 7-year-old is in soccer. Her soccer practices are Tuesday evenings.
Oh, yes, I remember that. I was in a really bad mood that day. Sorry.
Anyways, so it was at soccer practice, and, you know, at her soccer practices, I just sit there and read my book the whole time. Well, I overheard two of the other moms talking, because I think one of the other girls that's not in the team, she was talking about reading and stuff like that. And one of them mentioned that one of her daughters brought home Goblet of Fire. Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Arguably the best book of the series.
And so it sparked a discussion between these two moms, and the other one said, this is painful, that past Prisoner of Azkaban, the Harry Potter books are not suitable for children.
Disagree.
Like, what?
100% disagree.
And her only defense of that was that in Goblet of Fire is when people start dying.
That doesn't mean that.
Okay.
So, like, it doesn't. At no point do the deaths get super descriptive.
Right.
Like, J.K. Rowling never takes it to that point where it's like his face then peeled off from his eye. You know, it was. Oh God, this happened. You know,
I mean, it wasn't like a graphic death or anything.
No,
it was
I don't think
Cadaver when Cedric died.
Yeah, and that wasn't, I wouldn't even call that graphic. I mean, it
no,
was...
No, no, that's what I'm saying. It's not graphic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, it in fact, I think
it's terrible, of course.
Exactly, yeah.
But how are you going to say it's not suitable for children? Because death. Are we banning Lion King?
Yeah. Lion King would
be
one.
Most Disney movies, are we banning some kind somebody, of death. A parent dies in, like, every single Disney
exactly.
movie.
Exactly, so nope, don't let the kids see it. I 100% disagree with that. I'm all for, you know, kids shouldn't see graphic content, but, or
like,
read graphic content.
There's a line, and the child in question, I think, was 7 or 8. So, of course, there is a line of things that's too mature for them.
Yeah, and I don't think for that kid. I don't, at that age, they might not get the message behind everything that's
right.
going on. But I don't think anything in at least Harry Potter. I don't think there's
there may
anything.
Be some themes that go over their head.
But that's it. They'll yeah. still enjoy the story if they love the books. They'll still enjoy it, and I mean, they'll still maybe they will get that reaction, that story that comes from it. You know,
mm-hmm.
losing loved ones, the having to deal with losing those loved ones.
Right.
Because that's a big part of Harry Potter is loss.
Yeah.
It's a huge.
And
huge
I mean,
part.
The one mom. I mean, she said that her daughter brought home Goblet of Fire, and she said. Something along the lines, she told her daughter she wasn't going to read that, but the way she said it was more because it's such a big book and she's 8 years old or 7 or 8 years old, which, I mean, I kind of understand that her reading comprehension might not be ready
maybe,
for such a big book.
But I don't see that as a reason to say, no, you're not allowed to
read
it.
Yeah, it's like Charlotte, she'll pick up chapter books and stuff, and she's not quite there for the reading comprehension.
Yeah.
She can read the words.
Yeah.
Like, I think she read, like, the first chapter of Ella Enchanted.
That's cool.
And she finished it, and I asked what happened. I don't know.
She's first grade, so she's at that point that she's getting there, and she has so much interest in books as we do. So I think as she gets older, she'll tackle more of those books.
Yeah, so I think that's really the only line that should be drawn,
yeah.
really, is reading comprehension.
Yeah,
definitely. I'm against censorship
yeah.
in what your kids read.
I'm definitely to a point. I think there are some things that are too much, like I wouldn't hand...
I would Game of Thrones.
No,
to a 12-year-old.
Yeah, no, God no.
I think by high school years though,
yeah.
I would remove all censorship.
Yeah, by high school years, it's. I think as long as your kid's mature enough, hell yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a rapscallion that still acts like he's 5, that's different.
Well,
you've
yeah.
got other issues going on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely by high school age for sure. Read whatever you want. You know.
This did remind me. I forgot to mention. Of course, we read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, but I was
right.
also reading The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas this week.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one.
It's inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement.
Oh, very cool.
It's about a 16-year-old girl that witnesses one of her childhood friends shot by a cop. Mm. And it's sort of everything that happens after, kind of how, in a big way, how it affects her life and her relationships with other people.
That's cool.
But she mentions... how much of a Harry Potter fan she is, like the main character and her two best friends growing up, how they were all huge Harry Potter nerds. And they kind of hit because, of course, I always knew that one of the big themes in Harry Potter is discrimination.
Oh,
and
yeah.
persecution.
Oh, 100%.
You know, against the Muggleborns.
Yeah.
So it was kind of interesting seeing it used in that way, drawing a line. Like, that's one of the huge things Harry Potter's known
yeah.
for, and it's being used kind of, you know, in this book as well for that.
I think
it's
that's
drawing a parallel.
I think that's a part of Harry Potter a lot of people don't talk about is it
wasn't just a fight of good versus evil. Mm,
there was discrimination and just for the simple reason of who your parents were.
Yeah.
And that's
a condition you were born with.
Yeah, something
or
that's
not a condition, but
yeah, it's not a condition, but
status of life you were born
right.
with maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's nothing you control, and it's in reality it's not bad, but there are people who view it that way.
Right.
And that's not talked very much about when you talk Harry Potter, but J.K. Rowling did a really good job of speaking on that.
I mean,
subject.
there are studies done of people that grew up reading Harry Potter are less likely to discriminate.
Woohoo, we're not racist.
Woohoo.
That also helps, I think parentage helps with that a lot too. But yeah, I can definitely see it. Harry Potter it speaks on it very well. And that's really cool that book tied into
mm-hmm.
it, that it showed that comparison.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through it. I'm enjoying it so far.
That's cool. That's really cool. And that's that's a really hot subject right now. Yes. With everything that's going on with the Black Lives Matter movement and with cops. So that's really interesting. That sounds like that'd be a really interesting book to read to see that perspective.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. Well, I've got a couple of quick mentions real fast.
Oh.
I mean, none of these, there's not much to really dive into.
Right.
So first, and I know you'll be super excited about this.
Oh, it's Twilight.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Sailor Moon Crystal board games are coming soon. I know you're excited. Let's all be excited.
Board games. Okay.
Board games. Yes. But it's Sailor Moon, and I had to bring it up.
I liked Sailor Moon when we were younger because of pretty girls. That was the reason I watched it.
Yeah, well, that's fine. That's fine.
Only reason I sat through those.
They're being produced by Discami Publishing Company out of Canada, so they will be in English.
Aha.
They will be in English. But there are at least two right now. There's a Sailor Moon Dice Challenge and a Truth or Bluff. And you can laugh at me all you want.
I'm not playing
those
games.
I'm going to rope my 7-year-old into playing them with me.
That would be pretty adorable. So that's cool. I guess we're wanting to tackle other kind of, jump into news.
I've got a couple other quick mentions.
Oh, yeah.
There are a couple TV adaptations. Glenn Cook's The Black Company is looking like it's slated for a TV adaptation.
I don't know that one.
I started the first one several years ago, but I think I just couldn't get into it, but I think I only read like 15 pages. So okay. I need to give it another chance.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see, American Gods by Neil Gaiman. That TV adaptation actually airs Sunday the 30th, tomorrow for us, yesterday for those listening to it, as of the day it comes out.
Right.
A lot of early reviews are saying that it's more relevant than ever.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
okay.
It's, I believe, an 18-year-old book, something like that, finally getting made into an adaptation, because it's been popular for a long time.
I know you talked about you reading it and you weren't really big on it.
I'm a bit of a blasphemer. I'm not crazy about Neil Gaiman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just something about his writing style just doesn't quite jibe with me.
Gotcha.
Like I said, I know that's blasphemy because he's insanely popular. So many people love him.
Burn the witch.
And The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, yeah.
The first three episodes are on Hulu now.
Oh, very cool. I did see commercials for that one. That looked interesting.
There's been a ton of marketing for Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, yeah, there has.
And it's, I think, eerily timely.
Yeah.
Is the review behind it. Yeah, that's being said about it right now. I'm actually going to try to watch those this week.
Yeah, that looks interesting. That looks
scary.
It's creepy, yeah. Very, very creepy.
Last thing I've gotten, I didn't know this was a thing, or not last thing I've got, but last quick mention,
right.
Gatsbying is a thing.
What is that?
So, on a subreddit, the Shower Thought subreddit, somebody pointed out, posting a Snapchat to your story and then waiting for that one specific person to watch it is the modern day equivalent of Gatsby throwing elaborate parties seeking Daisy's attention.
It's true.
So, there's now a term.
Gatsby.
For begging for attention from a significant other is Gatsby.
All I could see is Leo's picture there, DiCaprio's, of him raising the glass going, yeah. That's right, I'm cool.
Yeah. So that was kind of funny.
All right. another meme we need there. All right.
Oh, I lied. I have one other thing, which again, there's not much discussion here.
She's a liar.
I'm a liar. I am a dirty, dirty liar. Patrick Rothfuss, several years ago, founded the World Builders fundraiser. They fundraise, I believe, Heifer Corporation is one of the ones that they... Oh, Heifer International. I apologize. Heifer International, Mercy Corps, and First Book are a lot of the charities that they work with. They are doing... It's been 2 years since they did a fundraiser. They're doing one right now. They sell t-shirts, stuff like that, all going towards these fundraisers, which mostly go towards third world countries. Like Heifer International plays the long game, bringing education, materials,
and a
passing the gift philosophy that ensures generations of self-sufficiency down the road.
Yeah, that's what's important, yeah.
Mercy Corps jumps into actions as crises arise, bringing food, clothing, shelter, and education to people caught
that's
in dire
cool.
situations, like natural disasters and war. They are accepting artwork for
Aww.
T-shirts, stuff like that. And Patrick Rothfuss, actually, he said a few years ago, somebody submitted one for like baby onesies and stuff that was based off of Name of the Wind. And it sold pretty well, so they
that's
are
cool.
looking for people to submit artwork for the fundraiser sold. I believe it'll be voted on what's sold and what's not.
It's a really smart idea to get people focused on the campaign. Just say, hey, put in your artwork, and you, while you're there, you know, donate something.
Yeah,
you know,
so
just, that's cool.
Yeah, definitely check out Patrick Rothfuss's blog for more information on that.
See, I love that kind of stuff when people use their popularity to help people in need. That's awesome, because there's so many big famous people out there that, you know, they don't ever do anything.
Yeah.
That if they do something, it's just to
with their fame.
Yeah. If they
Not everybody can be Misha Collins, Greg.
Not everybody can be as awesome as Misha Collins.
It's true.
I love him.
It's hard.
I want there to be supernatural books so we can review those.
Oh, there are.
Danny, I know what we're reviewing. They have to be written by Chuck, though. Nobody else.
Right. All right, that's it. I have one other, but it's going to come after what you have. So
oh, very cool. Okay,
you jump into it.
I was about to say, that's our quick lightning round session.
Yeah,
that's
lightning round.
Have a soundbite that's the lightning round, and then you list off cool facts. All right. After my weird run there. my favorite author from high school, I've, you know, read every single Percy Jackson book so many times.
What, was it Rick Riordan?
No. Turns out it was Jonah Hill.
Wait, what?
I don't even think he's an author.
Well, he is now.
But Rick Riordan wrote a bunch of, you know, Percy Jackson books when I was younger. I've mentioned him so many times on this podcast. Disney Hyperbole, which I believe is his publishers, with the Percy Jacksons, all the books he wrote, they have given him what is called an imprint, which I wasn't 100% sure what an imprint exactly is, but I'm assuming it's to, like, kind of make him a producer through them? I'm not really sure.
Basically what it is one big publishing company will sort of have different smaller publishing companies.
Okay, so
that focus on different demographics.
Yeah, that's definitely what this is.
Yeah, so now there is Riordan Presents.
Riordan Presents.
Who is the publishing company?
It's Disney Hyperbole, I think it's called.
Okay.
It's through Disney. But what's really cool is basically all of Riordan's book, if you don't know who he is, he writes a lot of the mythology books, you know, books of modern stories based on Greek or Roman or Egyptian gods and different stuff like that. And so there's so many people who tell Riordan, oh, I want this mythology. No, I want this mythology, all the different religions that are out there. So what's really cool is with Riordan Presents, he has actually gone out and he is helping produce and release other mythology books, such as one author who is a Hugo and Nebula Award nominee, Yu-Han Lee. He usually writes sophisticated science fiction novels for adults, and his agent asked him whether he was interested in creating a middle grade adventure story based on the folklore of his native Korean ancestry.
Oh, okay.
And at first he was kind of hesitant, but he says that his daughter is a huge fan of Rick Riordan, and she's read every single one of his books, and so that kind of encouraged him, and he read them himself, and that kind of encouraged him, like, all right, I like this guy. Maybe he knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
and so he's going to write one on Korean. I don't want to say mythology, but
yeah,
his heritage.
Folklore,
yeah,
heritage. Okay. Yeah, it sounds like the whole thing is meant to be geared towards, of course, it's going to continue to be middle school, middle grade books,
mm-hmm.
But it's all geared toward those mythological adaptations, folklore adaptations.
Yeah, I think he signed two others on so far. Another one is by Jennifer Cervantes, a book called Storm Runner, which it looks like it's already been released, I'm assuming, just the way it's worded here. A standalone middle grade novel about a 13-year-old boy who must save the world by unraveling an ancient Mayan prophecy.
Okay.
And then another one from, apologize if I screw up this name, Roshani Koshi, first book of which is titled Arusha and the End of Time, which I was trying to see which one that's based on. I'm not sure which folklore that is. So we got Mayan, Korean, and the other one that's not telling me. But yeah, it looks like they are going to be trying to go towards, trying to hit those other religions, bringing other authors into it, or folklore of these different countries and cultures, and that's really cool. I know they'll still be, you know, middle grade age books, so it'll still be that same kind of YA style.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it'd be really interesting to see all these different, you know, all the different histories, all the different folklore.
Yeah. Well, on the other side of Rick Riordan, there's a little bit of controversy going on Twitter this week.
Oh, goody.
From, I guess somebody posted an excerpt from the first Magnus Chase book.
All right.
Sword of Summer.
Norse mythology.
Yeah. So the excerpt, I'm just going to read part of it, says, "It's hard to describe her. To really understand Natalie Chase, you had to meet her. She used to joke that her spirit animal was Tinkerbell from Peter Pan. If you can imagine Tinkerbell at age 30-something, minus the wings, wearing flannel, denim, and Doc Martens, you've got a pretty good picture of my mom." So this excerpt was posted on Twitter, and they said, "Hey, at Camp Half-Blood," was Rick Riordan's tag, "how about you cut the spirit animal line from the next printing?" Which Rick Riordan's response was that he spoke to his editor and they did remove that. Maybe I'm insensitive, but I didn't fully understand the reasoning for it.
Either. What's wrong with spirit animal?
It's cultural appropriation. Using what? Native American culture to describe a white woman.
Oh, no. I get the idea behind it, but there's so many people nowadays that say my spirit animal is this, and they're not trying to do it to be against Native Americans. It's just it's in our culture.
It's irreverent of Native American culture was the argument. But what's funny is there were several people, because I scrolled through the comments quite a bit, and there were several people going, I'm half Native American. I'm Native American. They're like, this doesn't bother me.
No, it, I mean.
He's there, you know. I found it kind of cute. Oh, it was kind of funny.
I mean, it's if you go with other controversies with Native Americans going on right now, is the NFL team the Redskins? Mm-hmm. I understand that. I don't blame them people for being upset at
if
that.
There was that's a problem.
It's that is completely understandable. That's everywhere. It's a little. It's a young, probably middle school age girl that's saying this. Or guy. I'm
no,
not
it
sure.
Looks like an adult.
Oh, it's an adult saying mm-hmm. it, but still, I mean, it's not being used in a harsh way. It's not defaming anybody. I don't know. I mean,
I kind of understand the cultural appropriation. I kind of understand where they're coming from. I think it's a little overboard to remove it from the book.
I think it's a little overboard that people are freaking out about it.
I mean, they're not.
And I use freaking out. I mean, they got on social media and messaged the author.
But see, the one that kills me mm-hmm. is in a lot of these people are saying, well, Peter Pan had such a kind of racist view of Native Americans that it was offensive. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's true. That movie was made in, what, the 50s?
Yeah.
Yeah, culture, it was. Culture it was a very poor representation of Native Americans.
Culture was different back then.
But are you telling me that we can't reference Peter Pan because Disney did a poor job representing Native Americans in that movie?
There's a lot of older cartoons that we wouldn't be allowed to reference.
Yeah, that's...
Because of those times.
That's just crazy.
It is. It's just a little overboard. I would understand if it was defaming it, if it was using it in a harsh way. Okay. But it sounds like it's a character describing... Wasn't it saying their mother?
I think
it's a character describing their mother, and it doesn't sound like they're shining her in a bad light. So
yeah.
I don't.
Well, it's funny. Somebody in the comment said that they're in the UK, I believe, mm-hmm. and instead of spirit animal, it says archetype or something like that.
The archetype. I mean that's fine. Because Riordan moved it, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be there. It doesn't have. You know, the wording doesn't bother me. But the reason that people are so PC about it, it's. There's a line.
I'm usually for political correctness, but I don't know. This just seems like much.
I think political correctness, there's a time and place for it. I'm not saying that we need to be, I can say whatever I want because it's freedom of speech. You should be kind towards others. But at the same time, something like this isn't insulting anyone. It's not attacking anyone. I've never seen that. I didn't even know it was Native American until you just said something
really?
About it. Literally. I thought that was something white girls said when they went to their astrology, whatever person went, my spirit animal is this. That's how I always saw it. So,
well,
I apologize if that offends anyone.
I just had to scratch my head over this because I don't know.
It
seemed so nitpicky.
It's very, that is the perfect word. That I was trying to think of a word to say nitpicky is perfect. It's too much. Calm down, people.
Okay. All right. That ends everything that I have for this week. Next week, we are going to be reading...
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun. For We Are Many by Dennis Taylor. This is the second book in the Bobaverse series.
I love that.
Which, yeah. It's fun to say Bobaverse.
Bobaverse.
Which the first book was We Are Bob, which... Well, We Are Legion, We Are Bob.
We Are Legion, We Are Bob, yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. It was one that we were not expecting to be as good as it was.
Honestly, I think I was just going through Goodreads because you said, Greg, I'm picking all the books. Pick something. So I was just going through Goodreads, and I was like, I don't remember which book came. It was, I just saw it, and I went, no, it looks funny. Okay. And so we started reading it, and we both went, holy crap, this is fun.
It was really good. It wasn't perfect, but it was really good.
Yeah.
It's been like 6 months since we read it, so I'm kind of afraid that I've forgotten
Yeah, let's not overhype it too much, because I don't remember a lot about the book, but I do remember it was fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll be reviewing
that. I didn't even realize it was out yet. Until people started reviewing it on Goodreads.
Right. That is definitely one I'm looking forward to. So, yay, next week.
Yay. Okay, so now we can go to our review section where we are reviewing 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne.
Which, we're going to give a spoiler warning, but honestly...
Yeah, I'm not sure if it counts.
It doesn't,
For a book that's 150 years old, I don't know that it counts. But I didn't realize that old. Nonetheless, yeah, 1860s.
Wow, okay.
We will be... spoiling plot points in 100%. The book.
But and by we, she means her, because I didn't finish
it. He mostly fell asleep.
Oh, yeah.
But for a spoiler-free review, please visit our website, bookgeeksunc.com.
What?
We promise no spoilers on the website.
Yes. All right.
Okay, so I have a nickname for this book. This book is Magic School Bus for the 19th century.
Yeah, that's true. With a lot of going off topic.
Oh, man. There's so many lists. And, I mean, I was talking to Jordan. Jordan did ask that I give him a shout out. He's not here today, but he did ask that I tell everybody that this is his favorite book.
I mean, he's...
Or one of his favorite
books.
He's
here, but he's in the other room watching American Tale.
And he decided he was I'm kind of jealous. I just love that movie.
He's in there enjoying American Tale. So.
Bastard.
It's totally not because the two-year-old wouldn't go to bed.
No. And so me and him were talking about it some, and he pointed out that there are tons of lists in this book because the main character is a scientist.
Yes, which makes sense.
And as he sees all these things underwater... he's listing everything he sees. It's not even really describing. It's just listing.
There was this.
And that's true to the character of, you know, that he is a scientist.
Yes.
At
the same time, I wanted to bash my head in because I was like, I don't care.
Yeah, when there's like a page and a half of one list, it's
just move
insane.
On. And I get it. This is an older style novel, and that's going to be a lot of my excuses today, is I'm going to say, I hated this, but I understand it's old.
I mean, I've read a couple of classics before. Of course, most of what I've read has been like Jane Austen or Charlotte Bronte. It's not the same. I mean, I've read some older stuff, but from the 19th century, that's most of what I've read.
Yeah.
The style, of course, it was different. Every author has their own style.
Yeah.
But it was the list that killed me. Because towards the end of the book, there was actually some action happening.
Well, that's good.
And those were the best parts of the book for me, where something was actually happening. It was, I mean, I think you would have enjoyed it if you got to that point.
Probably. When something was happening, I actually was like, oh, okay, cool, something's happening, and I got into it. Which, for those who don't know, I guess we should give a quick synopsis on 20,000 Leagues. I know maybe you know it, but...
So, I completely misunderstood the concept of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. They are not literally 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. They traveled 20,000 leagues while under the sea.
I assumed when I ever heard of the book, I assumed it was they went that deep into the sea, too.
Yeah, but that's deeper than the Earth.
Yeah.
The Earth's diameter.
It's not possible.
So.
But basically...
I didn't know the length of a league, which, so that I can help everybody else out, one league is roughly like 3.5 miles.
Okay, there we go. So, I never knew that.
Now we know.
Well, for those who don't know, the basic story, and I can't remember the main character's name. I know he was French.
Anorak,
yeah, Professor Anorak.
Professor Anorak.
Basically, this is back in the 1860s, and there is supposedly an animal... some enormous Moby Dick-sized animal, they think a narwhal, is attacking ships and hurting them. So, you know, the American government decides to send out a boat to track it down and find it, kill it, wipe it from the face of the earth.
Naturally, they find a submarine instead.
Professor, Anorax, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anorak.
Anorak, his manservant, and a spearman that's on the boat all get knocked from the boat when this so-called narwhal knocks them off.
Right.
They then find out it is a enormous size ship, submarine-style nautical ship, I guess is what you can call it, that is piloted by Captain Nemo, asking, I was about to make a Finding Nemo joke, but it didn't work. I was going to say, where's my son? But that was Marlin's. And so basically, Nemo kind of shows them, he shows them what it's like. And
Nemo basically says this is a secret. Nobody can know about this. Since you're here, you can't leave.
Right.
So, Professor Anorak is fascinated by everything. So, for a while, he doesn't want to leave while the other two people with him.
The spearman.
Yeah, the spearman. And his manservant. And his manservant. Of course, his manservant kind of creeped me out.
Yeah, he is a little weird.
But the spearman, the Canadian.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember his name. He just kept referring to him as the Canadian. My Canadian companion.
The spearman.
The spearman. They're eager to get off the boat, but Professor Anorak kind of ignores them until the end.
Weirdly enough, yeah.
Yeah, because he's fascinated by everything that he's seeing.
Yeah, that's true.
Towards the end, there's a part where they get stuck between two icebergs that's really good. Mm-hmm. The end scene where, and this is where, I guess, where the spoilers are going to come in, Professor Anorak is escaping from the Nautilus while they're in a maelstrom. So
okay,
that was interesting. it was a really good scene though. I know it's an old book, but I didn't like the way that it ended because they're in the maelstrom and they're sort of in, I don't know what it's called, like a mini submersible.
Okay.
That comes off of the Nautilus.
Right.
But they're still tethered to the Nautilus.
Okay.
Because that's how it works.
Yeah.
And they get there, they don't realize they're headed for a maelstrom. And then while they're going down through the maelstrom and everything's spinning, Professor Anorak hits his head and blacks out, and when he wakes up, he's been saved.
Oh, and it just kind of ends?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah. There's no how did they survive, there's no did the Nautilus survive, which I'm okay with that being a mystery. Yeah, is the Nautilus still out there?
Disappearing back into the ocean,
Professor Anorak and the spearmen and his manservant.
Supposedly Captain Nemo's still alive. He didn't get killed at any point.
He was on the Nautilus, and I don't know what happened to the Nautilus.
Okay, so yeah, that's cool. That right there, not knowing what happened to the Nautilus is fine. That is. I have to say, it's just, especially like the first two chapters, I just remember going, oh God, I'm not going to like this. Because it was very much a... And the best word I can think is info dump, because it's very much, all right, the time is this. This is what's going on. I'm telling you everything that's going on because I am da-da-da, and I can do this. So anyway, we did this, and this happened, and it was very much, and maybe this is Verne's style. Maybe this is older style writing. I don't know. But I am much more into books, and I remember this from English class in high school, and I hated those classes. I remember the basic thing of show me, don't tell me. When you're writing something. And I love books that something happens and I have to reread it going, wait, yeah, that happened. Oh, that means, oh, and I connect things on my own. This book felt very much a professor sitting down and telling me, yes, I did this, and then I saw this, and then I did this, and then I did... It was very listy, it was very long, it was very boring. There was no imagination to it for me. He told me everything.
There was some scientific speculation that I found funny.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, it's, like I said, 150 years old. So, of course, there have been so many advances in science before then. Right. But I do still find these things interesting. At one point, they discussed that the core of the Earth is losing its heat. So there is a theory that eventually the Earth will cool to the point of being a dead rock.
Hmm.
150 years later, we're discussing climate change and global warming. I found that really funny.
We're going the opposite way.
And the other part was, it was Anorak talking about whales and the way that they move their tails. Because whales are mammals. They move their tail in an up and down motion, whereas fish move their fins side to side.
Yeah, yeah.
And in this book, and I don't know if this was actually the theory at the time, but it said that whales used to move their tails side to side like fish.
Huh.
And that's not the case. They right. used to be land animals. They moved to the water, so their spines stayed the same shape as land animals.
Right, right, right.
I just find stuff like that really fascinating. It's not a negative against the book. I find
that's
the old
cool.
science really
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see how the old science, how they used to think, because Verne seems very sciencey. Mm-hmm. He seems, I mean, there's almost religion based off him.
Yeah, there was a bunch of science in this book. And I found the book, even though it was dry and through all the lists, I did find it incredibly imaginative for its time period.
When it came to the ship itself, when it came to the Nautilus, I think is what they called it.
Describing how it worked.
Yeah, was really cool and really imaginative for, you know, the 1860s. This is
a lot of calculations involved in this book too.
There was. But when it came to the ship, I did like how imaginative it was. And I mean, you gotta imagine back in Jules Verne time, there wasn't anything like that.
No, there was. I actually looked it up.
Really?
I actually looked up the first of any ship that went underwater was in the 1500s. They didn't.
Really?
They didn't really become like the technology wasn't there until around 1900s, 1890s, to really be used regularly.
Yeah,
and I don't think they were used like in military until World War One, I believe.
Actually, I don't know why I remember this. Maybe because wars was really my favorite thing about history class. Was I thought in Civil War we had an instance of where both sides of America and Confederates had a submersible that they used.
Until, I believe, the 1890s or 1900s, the only submersibles that were invented were very short range.
Yeah, yeah.
Could not get off the coast.
Yeah, nowhere near what the Nautilus can do.
Right.
But you gotta still think, during Verne's time, there wasn't anything that massive. Well, like, nowadays, they could easily build something that big and put it in the water, I'm sure.
Yeah, we have submarines.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I get it. I mean, for some reason, I'm thinking the Nautilus is so much bigger than submarines we have nowadays. I was thinking it was...
Yeah, it's
like,
probably about the same size.
I don't know. Whenever I imagine Moby Dick, I mean, I imagine him being an unrealistic, just massive monster. And I know submarines are big. I've never been up to one close. And I know they are very large vehicles, but I just imagine this machine, just enormous. Now, here's a question I had that I didn't know if it ever got answered in the book. Is Nemo by himself? I know there's at least one other guy. Is he running the ship by himself?
There are other crew members, but they're never mentioned by name. They're never even really, like, on screen, quote-unquote.
I wasn't sure, because when it started off, all I ever was Nemo said this, Nemo said that. There was never a this guy over here.
Yeah, Nemo's the only one you really ever talk to. Anorak talks through it with his companions a little bit, because they're talking about the air usage in the ship, because there's they have to surface once every 24 hours to get fresh air in the Nautilus.
Right.
They talk about how if Nemo will never let anybody go, then eventually he'll get to a point where he has that time frame of when he has to go up to get air will get shorter and shorter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they discuss it at one point.
Yeah. Now, there's one other question I had. I know one of Nemo's first rules was there was certain points when I lock you in your cabins. Did he ever say why? Like, there were things he didn't want them to see that he did.
If there was, I didn't catch it.
Okay, because I just remember that, and I'm like, what the hell is he doing?
Yeah, if there was, I didn't catch it.
And one of my first thoughts with this, with Nemo, because it was very much heavy, he was very much the type that was like, I am done with the rest of the world. I'm living. Yeah. This is my own thing. I am of no country. This is my thing. I'm curious to see how much the creators of the video game BioShock pulled from this book. How much inspiration they took.
They pulled more from Atlas Shrugged for BioShock.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
they might have borrowed some from...
It had the same kind of feel to it, because one, it was underwater. It was a secret society getting away from the governments of the world.
I mean, I guess, yeah, you could say that.
But Nemo,
it was...
Nemo was a lot more by myself.
Yeah.
So So, I don't know. That was just my first thought, because Bioshock's the best. Yeah, I didn't like Atlas Shrugged, so.
Yeah.
I tried that movie. It didn't work.
Yeah. The book is worse. I don't know. The other note I had, I made a note that this book is to sci-fi as the Silmarillion is to fantasy. Ugh. Just the almost textbook style in some parts.
And I think much with how I feel about the Beatles to music, I'm not a fan of them, but I can appreciate what they did towards that field.
Okay, so, and towards the genre.
And with Jules Verne, I think I feel the same way. This isn't for me. It's not anything I'm going to reread or buy probably ever. But I can appreciate what the ingenuity, the creativity and imagination he had. I mean, just the idea of this was really cool. And I mean, even you think Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very imaginative and really cool book from how I understand. I'm sure it's not much different in the style, so I probably wouldn't like it either.
Yeah, except that then you get a whole bunch of descriptions of rocks.
Yay.
Instead of sea creatures.
So I can definitely appreciate where this book came from.
Yeah, I think the only note I have, I guess, is I mentioned the manservant. Did he creep you out?
A little bit.
Because like
master wants this.
When they were trapped between the icebergs, mm-hmm. Of course they're stuck underwater. So they have to work their way out or they're going to suffocate because they don't have enough oxygen.
Right.
And they cut it really close, as drama would have it. At one point, the manservant says something about, and I'm not getting the wording right here because I was listening to an audiobook, so I was just jotting down. I said, oh, if only I didn't have to breathe, so there would be more oxygen for Master. I'm like, that's, I know you're getting paid by him, but that's a little much.
He's going to be asking to take care of Master's bed next.
I hope he gets paid really well.
He must have said crap like that, because if someone barely pays me anything and I'm about to die, I'm not going to go, here, I'll hold my breath for you, Master.
This guy just got you stuck in a submarine with a captain that doesn't want to let you go ever.
And you're still rooting for this guy. All right. He ignores you for most of the book, but... Yeah, it was interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, I feel like I don't have a whole lot of notes on it. I don't know, I didn't... It explored the world and undersea life.
Yeah, it was definitely
it
creative.
It has the theme song, Sebastian, Under the Sea. Under the Sea.
It is definitely creative, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Just a snoozer for me.
Yeah, it was difficult to get through sometimes.
Yep.
But I guess we're starting to repeat ourselves, so we better wrap it up some.
Survival. Yep, I think that does it.
All right. So like I said, next week we're going to be reading Bob-verse. For We Are Many by with the Bobiverse.
We're going to go the opposite direction.
What else are you going to be up to this week?
I am most likely going to be playing the game called Life.
The game called Life.
It is, yeah,
and
it's fun.
And we're also working on reading the second book in The Faith and the Faithful and the Fallen, Valor.
I can see it.
Yeah, you can see it because I've started it.
Yep, it's right above your desk.
Yes. And it's good so far.
That's good.
It's good so far. Cool. I think I'm only like a little over 100 pages into it.
Very cool. All right. I think that does it.
That does it. Woo. Everybody have a wonderful week.
Yay.
If you have read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, if we missed something or misunderstood something, feel free to leave us a comment. Let us know what you thought of the book.
And we also have a Facebook page as well as Twitter. Just get on there, you know, talk to us. We try to post things every once in a while, just asking questions, checking up on you guys, you know, just being the generally annoying parents we are.
Yeah, come chat with us on Goodreads.
Please don't leave us in the old folks' home alone. We just want company. And, let us know how our awesome voices sound.
Also, a few weeks ago, we mentioned it, but we'll bring it up again. We've also started a video game podcast, Woo-hoo. Controllers and Keyboards.
Yay.
That one is running a giveaway. Once we get 50 likes on Facebook for that one, we will be giving away a gift card to Steam, Xbox, PlayStation, you name it.
Yeah, all
you
that
got
kind of
it.
Stuff.
We got to get to 50 likes. I believe we've got like 25 or 26 right now.
I think I saw 27 last
time. Okay, 27. Cool. That's that much closer. A random person will be selected to get that gift card.
Should we do the same thing on our Facebook, but do a Borders gift card?
Oh, still too soon. Still too soon.
Yeah, I think that's the store where I got my last Harry Potter book, I think.
So many memories.
Oh, so sad.
But
we'll
miss
you.
Everybody have a wonderful week, and we will talk to you later.
Have fun reading.